Among the Water Buffaloes, A Tiger's Steps by Aliette de Baudard, narrated by Catherine Ho.
In the days where the earth was newly broken and the living still remembered the sleepers walking the world, a water buffalo found a tiger in a coffin. It was in the days where the sleepers' land purged itself of all it could not bear, coughing out into the periphery seeds and parts by the thousands, and also those sleepers that were unsuitable or broken or merely in excess. The tiger was one of these last, though who knew what kind? Now, tigers are the natural enemy of the buffalo, and this buffalo belonged to a large herd. Rain had fallen in abundance upon the parched earth, and the herd was full of eager young ones, barely aware enough to realize all the dangers the world now held. So the buffalo was ready to kill the tiger, or to push the coffin back into the dome, into the sleeper's land. But as the tiger unfolded his body and stalked, all grace and elegance, from the broken coffin, the buffalo saw, for a bare, suspended moment, a shadow of what the world had been before its breaking. Green grass and clear water, and the memory of sleepers that were as gods. And so, in spite of her misgivings, the buffalo took the tiger back to her herd. How Kim Trong Got to the Pool. After the sun goes down, the girls huddle together in the remnants of a house by the sea, every screen, every scrap of metal since long scavenged to keep their own bodies going, and tell each other stories of animals and plants and of the world before and after the catastrophe. Twi is outrageously good at this. Her sight allows her to read the other girls' microscopic cues, from heartbeat to temperature of skin, and adapt her tales of spirits and ghosts for maximum effects. Nyok He stutters, barely hiding the tremors in her hands, nerve wires that broke down and that she hasn't yet scavenged replacements for. But she has the largest range of tales of any of them. Ai Hong speaks almost absent-mindedly, playing with those few crab bots that aren't frightened by so much light and noise. They skitter away when she puts down her hand and drop back again when she frowns in thought, trying to recall a particular plot point. Mei usually sits, listless and silent, but this time she gets up and leaves the house as Nyok He finishes the tale of the mechanic and the durian fruit. Kim Trong gets up and follows her. She finds her in the courtyard, watching Vi finish the dismantling of her hibernation berth. She leans against the wall, breathing slowly, evenly. Vi nods to Kim Trong as she comes out. She's busy figuring out how to pull out the last few chips and cables, scavenging everything she can so the girls can keep going for a while longer, absorbing and integrating the remnants of sleepers' technology to repair themselves. A few crab bots crawl over the power source, trying to fix it in spite of all the evidence, but most have given up and are simply dragging pieces of metal back to their burrows. They were meant to keep things running, to repair the dome, but they were cut loose after the catastrophe and are now, like the girls, taking everything they can for themselves. Vi isn't talking to Mei. But then Vi was the one who didn't want Kim Trong to bring Mei home, to let the tiger loose among them. "Give me a hand afterwards, will you?" Vi asks. Kim Trong nods. Her lineage is that of a repair construct. Her distant ancestor, who survived the catastrophe, isn't here anymore, but she and generations of her descendants have left Kim Trong routines. Knowledge at the organic and electronic level, so thoroughly ingrained, it might as well be reflexes by now. Mei straightens up when Kim Trong arrives, gives her a tight and forced smile. "You should be inside," Kim Trong says. Mei shakes her head. "I'd just be an imposition." "You could tell stories," Kim Trong says, "of the world before, of how we broke it past repair." Mei's voice is curt. "You weren't the only ones," Kim Trong says. The girl's ancestors might have been constructs, acting under duress, having free will only insofar as it didn't contradict the sleeper's orders. But does that really make them blameless? I'm the villain in all your stories, May says. She shakes her head. The tiger. The walking time bomb for Kim Trong's kind. No wonder Vi wants her gone, and Kim Trong should follow Vi's advice. Tell May to leave.
It's the way we learnt the world.
The world. May's gaze looks past her at the dark shape of the dome that dwarfs them both. The air smells faintly of brine, of spilled oil. It wasn't supposed to be like this. Many things weren't. Are you angry they left you behind? May shrugs. It was broken, wasn't it? The birth? Kim Trong nods. Beyond repair. Or at least, not with the tech we have. I'm sorry. Don't be, May shrugs. Her eyes haven't left the dome. It's not like I could go back. She rubs her fingers against her arms, as if drawing the contours of scars or wire traceries. What would they feel like, those fingers on Kim Trong's skin? We thought the earth would be green when we woke up again, cleansed. She doesn't say from what or who bears responsibility for it. It's not so bad, Kim Trong says. It's all they've known, really, save for phantom lineage memories, a nagging sense that things ought to be freer. Larger, less dangerous. The silent killer, the thoughtless expectations that get girls killed out there if they don't shut them out. No, May says. She shakes her head. Why did you save me, Kim Trong? Kim Trong has thought of that at night. She remembers finding the birth in the still waters of the pool by the dome. Vi strenuously arguing that anything from the sleepers was poisoned gifts and that they should leave it there to break down. Kim Trong, too curious for her own good, reaching out, touching the glass. Her lineage gift stretching, the birth switching to maintenance mode. Letting her see the still, waxy face of an unknown woman, eyes wide in a perfect oval of a face. Not like Kim Trong's own face, scarred from a fall into rocky water, from encounters with fractured tech, to crumbling ledges and acid earth that ate at her skin, the 100 ways that the world tries to kill them for the mere act of living and being free. A face that's beyond scavenging, beyond survival. Why not? Kim Trong asks, trying so very hard to keep it casual. She leans against the wall. Close enough to May that she can feel the heat of May's body, the feel and smell of her, a sharp taste in her throat. A memory, not hers, but a lineage one, of rooms with walls so white they hurt the eyes, of hands brushing alcohol against wounds. May looks at her, cocking her head in a particular way. And Kim Trong can't tell what she's being measured against. Whims? I shouldn't think any of you had them. We're not animals, Kim Trong says, more harshly than she meant. May looks horrified. Of course not. I didn't mean just that you couldn't afford them. I'm sorry, Kim Trong.
No, it's all right, Kim Trong says, heavy with something she cannot name.
She reaches out to run a hand against May's cheek, feeling the contour of soft, warm skin so unlike hers. A shiver racks her body from head to toe, all the lineage memories rising and blurring together as if the world was suddenly washed in rain. May tenses. She's going to pull away. What a foolish, foolish idea. Vi was right. It was a bad plan from the start. But she doesn't. She leans in, gently taking Kim Trong's hand, and sets it on her lips. Taking it into her mouth, her tongue wanders around Kim Trong's flesh, sending pinpricks of desire down Kim Trong's spine. The girls design their own descendants and no longer need sex to reproduce, but some pleasure reflexes still remain the same across generations. Kim Trong withdraws her finger, slowly, while drawing May's lips to her own, drinking all of her in. Such a bad, bad idea.
Big sis? Vi's voice. Of course. Kim Trong breaks away, watching Mei smile at her, tentatively, and with the tightness of someone who's not sure if things will still be there tomorrow. I'm sorry, she says, but I have to go. Later? Mei relaxes a fraction. Wouldn't dream of missing it. She pulls away from the wall and goes back towards the house. Kim Trong should go back to the berth, help Vi out, but she has time. She can watch until Mei is gone, completely swallowed by the darkness. Kim Trong walks slowly to Vi, feeling the heaviness in her subside. Her breathing slows down until her lungs no longer burn. The berth is now little more than scrap metal, a tantalizing mess of opened-up compartments with torn cables and broken parts. Kim Trong runs a hand slowly on the control panel. It warms up to her touch, trying to cycle itself back into maintenance mode. That's what failed. The regulator in the control panel. The crabs can't repair that. If the dome hadn't ejected her, she would have died inside. She thought Vi was going to say something harsh, something about things being for the best if that had happened. But her sister's dark eyes are wide open, with the same lack of expression as Mei's when she was watching Vi dismantle her berth. Did you hear everything? Kim Trong asks. I'm not a spy, Vi says, affronted. But I have eyes, and you do too, except you weren't using them to pay attention. I don't understand. The crab bots, Vi says curtly. When you two kissed, they gathered around her in a circle, like a court. She's waking up. She. Kim Trong flushes, embarrassed, though she doesn't know why. She means no harm. Mei is a sleeper. Clusters of implants and gen mods, the algorithms that used to enforce compliance to the sleeper's will. Algorithms that generations of the girl's lineages haven't been able to breed out, the same algorithms that bend the crab bots to her will. Centuries of enforced obedience in their blood. And should Mei decide to give orders? Her kind never does mean harm, Vi says. She shakes her head. They didn't set out to break the world or to deny us our freedom until things don't go their way. She reaches out, squeezes Kim Trong's hand between hers. I'm not doing this out of spite. I know what you want. Does she? When Kim Trong herself doesn't know what she wants? I know what you want. It hasn't changed, Vi says. She picks up a scrap of metal from the wreck of the berth, crushes it between her fingers, slowly starts absorbing it into her skin, growing a bulge that will be digested next time she needs repairs. I'm sorry, but things are what they are. But tigers don't abandon their stripes or their fangs just out of charity. I know, Kim Trong says. But she can't find an answer that would satisfy her and Vi. The tiger didn't ask where it had woken up, or when, or where the sleeper's land had gone, or why he seemed to be the only one of his kind in the midst of animals that should not have survived the breaking of the world. He sat, listless, until one day the buffalo took him to the periphery again, showing him the boundary with the sleeper's land. The smooth surface of the dome resting in a sea sparkling with the rainbow colors of spilled oil. There was no door, no way to enter, and not even windows to guess at what might be happening within. She expected him to scream, or to weep, or simply to rise and stalk near the walls of the dome with the same deadly elegance as when he'd risen from his coffin. Instead, he remained silent, though there was a gleam in his eyes that hadn't been there before. We can look for a way in, the buffalo said, finally, because the silence made her uncomfortable. Perhaps there'll be someone you knew. The tiger spoke then, in a voice rough with disuse. How do I know they're not all dead inside? The buffalo had no answer, but she felt as though her heart was being squeezed into bloody shreds. After the kiss. Kim Trung rises in the morning and finds May gone. For a slow, suspended moment, she thinks something has gone wrong. But all the girls still sleep on their mats. Twee hugging the machine she's building, an augment based on crabbot biology that will help her dive longer into polluted waters. Nyok Ha tossing and turning. Vi perfectly still. Her lineage was gen-modded from plants, and she draws oxygen into her body through her skin and eyes rather than through lungs. Kim Trung finds May outside by the wreck of her birth, watching the rising sun. Part of Kim Trung's lineage remembers a bright blue sky and stars scattered across the night, but for all of her life, the sky has been gray and overcast, the heavy clouds promising a storm that never comes. May's hands rest loosely on the control panel. Lights flash, fleetingly, before sinking back into quiescence. May bends, kissing Kim Trung. A brief taste, a wounding sharpness on the tip of her tongue, her hips digging into Kim Trung's, and then she pulls away, though Kim Trung can still feel the weight of her presence. It's beautiful, isn't it? I had forgotten what it was like. Kim Trung doesn't see beauty, merely the same thing she sees every day. But May's enthusiasm is infectious. It is, she says. 300 years of missed sunrises, May sighs. She says, finally, it was beautiful too, the world before, in a different way. She crouches at the foot of her berth, and Kim Trung crouches with her, no longer seeing the shadow of the dome. Around them is nothing but muddy earth with the sharp, familiar tang of metal and oil. May's outstretched hands wrap around Kim Trung's calloused ones, a touch that Kim Trung aches to take to her chest, to her hips. Slender spires of metal going all the way into the sky and gleaming as the sun struck them. And a flow of vehicles and people in the streets, all colors and sounds. A roar that would never fall silent, not even while night came. As she speaks, Kim Trung feels it, rising in her blood, memories of the lineage, distant sounds and images, a sense of a world opening up around her that could give her anything and everything, leaving her breathless and flushed. It's gone, she says, more abruptly than she means. And in such a place, she would be a servant, a menial. Yes, May said, and perhaps it's just as well. We weren't always kind to your ancestors, among all our other sins. She pauses. Kim Trung runs her hands over May's face again. She bends closer, but May pulls away before the kiss. I used to design buildings, making sure everything was in perfect harmony in rooms and walls. There's not much I can bring you. You can command the bots, Kim Trung wants to say, and then thinks of how Vi and the others would view this ability, not as a useful skill, but merely a prelude to their own enslavement. You'll learn. May's hands tighten into fists. Not as well as you do, and not as fast. I wasn't born into this world. We can wait. Can you? You have no space for dead weight. Feeling useless, Kim Trung knows how that goes. Even if there weren't 100 stories about sleepers waking up too early, she would know in her bones. You could design something here? May shakes her head. Vi would never let me do it. Besides, she makes a short, stabbing gesture. I'm not sure I know better than her when it comes to design. She'll come around. Will she? May's gaze is shrewd. You're... Kim Trung takes a deep, shaking breath. Vi thinks you're not one of us. May's hands rest at her side, quietly, looking at Kim Trung with an odd expression on her face. Before Kim Trung can protest that she doesn't think that way, not even sure if that would be a lie, May says. She's right. No, Kim Trung says. I'm a danger to you all, May says. The tiger in the story, the predator that undoes you in the end. I'm thankful you saved my life, Kim Trong, but it's best if I left. No, Kim Trong can't hear anything save the roar of blood in her ears, 100 different lineage calls, wondering how to fix a broken situation, finding no way out. You can't leave. You'll just die out there. Credit me with a little resourcefulness. May makes a short, stabbing gesture. The crab bots gather from the berth above them, watchful and still, awaiting orders. The entire world remembers. Her face twists in a terrible expression that wraps around Kim Trong's chest like a metal fist. I'm not like you girls. That doesn't mean you have to leave. May rises. It would have been worse in many ways if the crab bots had followed, but she's let go of her hold on them, and they're inert again, crawling over the wreck of the berth looking for anything they can use. It does. It's what I am. Too many implants, too many gen mods. To take them out of me would kill me. Her expression softens for a bare moment. She lays a hand on Kim Trong's shoulder with nothing of desire or lust in it. Don't feel bad. It's the way the world has to be. And I'm by no means blameless. Atonement, perhaps, for what I did to you and your ancestors. Kim Trong scrambles to her feet, struggling to find words. She can't leave. Vi has to be wrong. Of course she can stay with them. She's not a danger. Again and again, in circles in her mind. May, please. She does the only thing she can think of. She grabs May by the shoulder as she's walking away, turns May towards her with all the strength she uses to wrench cables out of sockets and chips out of their compartments. Don't touch me. It's like being electrocuted, a jolt of current that seizes all of Kim Trong's limbs, sends her to the ground, spasming, struggling to breathe, arms and legs refusing to obey, her entire being screaming with one voice. She has to stop. She has to be still. She has to bow down. Every single lineage memory breaks around her until the only one that remains is old, as vivid as yesterday. Her faraway ancestor bowing to a sleeper after repairing their vehicle, and the rush of pleasure that seizes her, stilling her where she stands. No. No. The world is broken, centuries have passed, and her ancestor is long dead. Slowly, agonizingly slowly, she pulls herself to her feet. And it can't have been that long after all. Because May is still standing, watching her with horror in her eyes. Her mouth opens, closes. Words come, dragged out of her. I didn't mean to. Kim Trong, I... And then she's gone, running away from the debris-strewn courtyard. Follow. Kim Trong has to follow her, or she'll lose her forever. She can barely stand, and the thought of catching up to May... The thought of her fingers resting on May's warm skin makes her stomach heave. Days passed, and the tiger ate again. He regained strength and plumpness, though he could not find a place among the buffalo's sisters and daughters. They spoke too fast of concerns and concepts he wasn't familiar with, and they refused to let the tiger touch the machines they were fixing. In the evening, he sat with the buffalo, speaking. Not of the world before the breaking, but of small, inconsequential things, making small talk and jokes until the buffalo's heart grew light again, until she forgot that she'd ever feared him. He grew fat and sleek, and with his mind running around in circles, found no use for himself in a world that had moved on. So instead, he remembered the past and the days when the ancestors of the buffalo had moved to do his bidding. The power that was still within him, as inseparably as his heart and liver, that had once made them kneel before him. And as he remembered, that power slowly woke up, unfolding within him as the tiger had once unfolded himself out of his coffin. One day, he looked at the buffalo's daughters. at their flat, blunt teeth, at their horns that could never be used as weapons, at their meager meals of grass, and saw that he was more than them.
"I can help you," he said.
They looked at him, incurious, and as the eldest turned away to look at her workbench, something stretched and broke in the tiger's mind.
"Stop," the tiger said fiercely. "Listen to me."
And the sisters and daughters of the buffalo, caught in the fist of his power, froze where they stood. The tiger watched all of them, as still as statues and awaiting further orders. He meant no harm, he told himself. He wanted to help them, to share the knowledge he bore from the sleeper's land, the secrets of machines and chips in his blood. And did it matter if they didn't want to listen to him? It was just that they didn't realize everything he could teach them, the wealth of knowledge that he'd hoarded within his mind and that could be theirs so smoothly, so easily. The knowledge they desperately needed to survive. He meant no harm, but the truth about tigers is this. They always end up thinking of themselves as kings and queens, no matter how changed the world might be. At the pool where May was first found. At the bottom of the incline, by the water's edge, May is skipping torn bits of metal in the pool, her arm a blur. With each movement she makes, more and more crab bots bubble up from under the dark, greasy surface of the water, a spreading dark mass that seems to echo May's gestures, some slow, secret dance that pours out of May like liquid gold. Kim Trong takes a deep breath and starts the descent. Her first footsteps bring down a shower of rocks. May looks up and sees her and keeps on watching her as she descends. When Kim Trong gets near her, she turns, frowning, her face going tight with effort. The crab bots vanish, sinking again into the depths of the pool. "She's waking up," Vi said, but she was wrong. May is awake now. Kim Trong's hands shake. Lineage again, howling at her to bend the knee, to obey as her distant ancestor once did. But the world was broken and taken apart and utterly changed. "Kim Trong," May says. "You see?" But Kim Trong doesn't leave her time. "You're a coward," she says. May's face tightens, and Kim Trong finally understands that what she thought of as May's expressionless face is merely despair, spread so widely that it distorts everything. "A coward," Kim Trong says again. "You'd rather run away than try to fix a problem." "I'm a danger to you. So is my knife," Kim Trong says levelly. "So are the bots." "The bots won't make you bend the knee." "They can kill me in other ways. They can go rogue or malicious." "You don't understand," May says. "Even if I don't mean it, even if I don't have any delusions of grandeur or any intention to use my powers, they're still here, in my blood. It's who I am." "It's who you once chose to be," Kim Trong says, "in a world since long dead. Do you want to continue being that person, the one who entered the birth, secure in the knowledge the world would be a paradise?" You saw it. May raises her hands and the crab bots rise again from the depths of the pool, ring after ring of speckled darkness. The world remembers. "All I have to do is lose my calm and it'll happen again. How can you?" Kim Trong thinks of being thrown to the ground, thinks of pain running through her limbs, of getting up and running after May. "I've been hurt before. The girls have been hurt before. Of course it will happen again." "You'll do the only thing you can do, apologize, make it better, and do your best so that it never happens again. We all stumble." "Not that way," May says, darkly. But she watches Kim Trong with that peculiar hunger in her eyes. "You say it like forgiveness is easy to earn." Kim Trong shakes her head. She walks closer. No nausea this time, nothing to stop her but the memory of pain. And runs a hand on May's skin. Part of her braces herself for another jolt, but there's nothing. "It's not. It never is. And atonement isn't either. Do you think it's going to be easy to remember every day that you shouldn't be giving orders? Every morning, May will wake up and know the price of impatience or anger. She'll see the crab bots and try not to command them, see the girls and not think of the constructs of the past, like being able to breathe and deliberately holding it forever and ever. May's entire body is taut, like a wire about to snap. No, but it's never going to work, Kim Trung. You've heard the stories. You know how they end. I know, Kim Trung says. But they don't have to all go the same way. May's face is a study in agony. Kim Trung. Kim Trung comes closer and wraps her hands around May's. Warmth and smoothness and the face she remembers, the woman trapped in a berth that she fell half in love with at first sight, the sleeper who should be their ancestral, implacable enemy. Tell me a story, she whispers. A different one.